Big week in African football. 40 national teams will play first leg fixtures in the qualifying competition for the 2018 World Cup in Russia. And by next Tuesday, November 17th, when the final second leg matches are played, only 20 African teams will remain in the running for one of those much coveted tickets to the 2018 World Cup. Remember, VOA World Cup fans, all of these upcoming African qualifiers are home and away series. The winners are determined by tallying the goals in the two games. The action will kick off Wednesday with matches in Maputo, Mozambique, and Karima, Sudan. In Maputo, Mozambique is matched against Gabon, and in Karima, about 400 kilometers northwest of the capital, Khartoum, Sudan will play Zambia. Both World Cup qualifiers are scheduled to begin at 1700 UTC on Wednesday. Now, in terms of World Cup pedigrees, Mozambique, Gabon, Sudan, and Zambia have never qualified for football's premier event. Sudan and Zambia each have captured a continental title, though. The Sudanese won the Africa Cup of Nations tournament in 1970, and the Zambians won the competition in 2012. Our African football guru, David Legg, is looking forward to this week's 2018 World Cup qualifiers. But David is also looking forward to the FIFA presidential election, the subject of our chat this evening. Sporty greetings, David.
Thank you, Sammy.
Off the pitch, David, two Africans, Musa Beliti from Liberia and Tokyo Sekwale from South Africa, officially in the running for president of FIFA, World Football's governing body. The election scheduled for February 26th in Zurich, Switzerland. What's your take, David? Do you think ultimately, Africa will put forth only one candidate?
Definitely, Sammy. That's our only hope of success. It's got to be one candidate. And I think, no bias, it's going to be the South African Tokyo Sekwale. Although, significantly at this stage, Sammy, he has not yet been endorsed by CAF. Now, CAF, the biggest confederation, they've got 54 members. In fact, I got in touch with FIFA just to make sure I got all my figures correct. I've had a lot of emails asking me which confederations have got so many votes. Well, here we go. Asia have got 46 votes. Africa have got 54. That's the highest. CONCACAF, that's North and Central America and the Caribbean, they've got 35 votes, so a not insignificant number. CONMEBOL, that's South America, they've got 10 votes. Oceania have got 11, and Europe have got 53. And when you add all those figures up, Sonny, you come to 209. Another theme of a number of emails I've received is, how does the voting actually work? How do you win the vote to become FIFA president? Well, Sonny, in the first round, irrespective of how many candidates survive, and I'm guessing it'll probably be about three of those seven, you need 140 votes. If you get that number of votes in the first round, you win. The show is over there and then. But what I think is far more likely to happen is it's going to be a gradual process and that nobody will get that magical figure first time round. What happens then, Sonny, is the person with the least number of votes is eliminated round by round. So the person with the lowest total drops out. And ultimately, what you need is 105 votes. That is just over half the 209, so 105. So if you want to win outright at the start, you get 140 votes. Otherwise, you eventually, when things get whittled down to the eventual two challengers, 105 votes will get you through. Clearly, everybody wants those African votes, Sonny, because within hours of the confirmation of those seven candidates, Al Khalifa from Asia, Al Hussein from Asia, Infantino, one of the UEFA candidates, and Tokyo Sekwale, that's four of the seven candidates, had all flown to Cairo to rub shoulders and no doubt make their cases to the African Football Confederation and its president, Issa Hayatou. For Sekwale to have any chance, Sonny, he has got to be endorsed by CAF. He, in fact, needs as many as possible of those 54 votes to have a realistic chance. You assume that Asia will go, I believe, strongly towards Al-Khalifa. And UEFA, if Michel Platini drops out because of this suspension issue, Infantino will surely be able to count on the majority there. And they, to me, Sonny, ultimately could be the big three, so to speak. It could be Tokyo Sequali with the backing of Africa, Infantino or Platini being backed by Europe, and Asia supporting Al-Khalifa. Sonny, I'm not going any further than that at this stage. It's too early. But obviously, we've all got our fingers crossed here in Africa that Tokyo Sekwale will become the first African president of FIFA. But boy, it's going to be tough, because even if he was to get all 54 CAF votes, he still has to find another 51. So he's going to be clocking up those air miles, and I suspect a fair amount of that time will be spent in Central America and also in the Caribbean, and perhaps also in Oceania. He has to woo people beyond the borders of Africa. Otherwise, he cannot succeed. Fascinating battle coming up, Sonny. Sometimes you feel that these football politics can be more exciting than watching the games themselves.
Thanks, David. That's our African football guru, David Legg, speaking with us once again from Johannesburg, South Africa. In African youth football, Mali and world champion Nigeria have won some big awards at the FIFA Under-17 World Cup in Chile, as we hear now from our Daybreak Africa sportsman, Mark Ouma.
Nigeria Golden Eaglets captain Kelechi Nwankwo is the Adidas Golden Ball Award winner at the just concluded FIFA Under-17 World Cup, FIFA revealed. The midfielder received the award for the tournament's best player. Nigerian striker Victor Osimhen received the Adidas Silver Ball Award for scoring the most goals at the tournament. He scored 10 goals, which is a new tournament record. Mali, who lost to Nigeria 2-0 in the final and are African Under-17 champions, had also something to cheer. Industrious attacking midfielder Ali Male received the Adidas Bronze Ball Award. However, Mali's biggest accolade for an individual player went to goalkeeper Samuel Diarra, who received the Adidas Golden Glove Award for being the tournament's best custodian. Meanwhile, the World Health Organization, WHO, has declared Sierra Leone free of the deadly Ebola virus, WHO revealed in Geneva, Switzerland. Consequently, Sierra Leone can now once again organize football matches. The Confederation of African Football banned the playing of football in the Mano River region, which includes Liberia, Guinea, and Sierra Leone, in August last year. This was aimed at preventing the spread of the Ebola virus. As a result, Sierra Leone hosted their home fixtures in Morocco, Cameroon, and Nigeria. Now, Sierra Leone can stage their first international match at home since they hosted Seychelles in Freetown in July last year in an Africa Cup of Nations qualifier. The WHO says Sierra Leone now enters a 90-day period of enhanced surveillance.
Thanks, Mark. That's Mark Ouma of our Daybreak Africa radio show, which you can tune in Monday through Friday on The Voice of America. If you tuned in to Monday's Sunny Side of Sports, you heard Douglas Mpuga lead off the show with a report on Russia being implicated in a widespread doping program in world athletics. The Russian sports minister, Vitaly Mutko, says the allegations made against his country by the World Anti-Doping Agency, or WADA, are not supported by evidence. The WADA report concludes by saying Russia should be banned from competing in athletics. Reporter Henry Ridgewell has more details for us from London.
From the peaceful surroundings of Geneva, the World Anti-Doping Agency set off a new earthquake to shake the foundations of global sport. Accusations that Russia has for years been conducting a state-supported doping program in athletics. Dick Pound is head of the commission looking into the allegations.
We have found cover-ups, we found destruction of samples in the laboratories, we found payments of money in order to conceal doping tests. among others.
Pound said the Russian State Security Service, the FSB, was present at anti-doping laboratories, part of a wider pattern of direct intimidation and interference by the Russian state. The commission called on Russia to be banned from athletics competition.
The outcome may be that there are no Russian track and field athletes in Rio. I hope that they get they recognize that it's time to change and make those changes.
Moscow's Minister for Sport strongly denied the allegations. Russia finished second in the London 2012 Olympics medal table behind the United States. Pound said the event had been sabotaged by the laissez-faire attitude taken by the International Association of Athletics Federations, or IAAF. The newly elected head of that body, Sebastian Coe, vowed Monday to clean up the sport, but admitted it would be a long road.
I've asked my council to convene on Friday this week. We will review what they have said, and then we will look at the next steps, which could include sanctions.
The IAAF Council has 27 members, most of them famous names, who now hold Russia's fate in their hands, says sports historian Philip Barker.
These people are big figures in athletics, and they have been charged with looking at what they're going to do, what their response would be.
Barker added that when Coe was asked would he ban Russia, the IAAF head said never say never. Henry Richwell for VOA News, London.
Thanks, Henry. As we heard in Henry's report, the IAAF Council will meet on Friday to discuss the Russia case. Follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. And my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. I'm VOA Sunny Young, and that's the Sunny Side.